Are you looking to give your immune system a boost? This is Dr. Ronald Hoffman with a natural solution from Future Farm Botanicals, liquid wild oil of oregano with rosemary extract and natural honey flavor. Future Farm's wild oil of oregano supports a variety of health benefits, including antimicrobial effects, as well as supporting the immune system. Plus, Future Farm is the first ever to formulate wild oil of oregano with rosemary. Rosemary aids circulation, helps alleviate muscle pain, improves memory, and also gives your immune system a boost. The natural honey flavor enhances the taste while still giving you all of the benefits. Future Farm sources this product from the Mediterranean and produces it in the United States. For more information and to order, call 888-841-7216, 888-841-7216, or go to myfuturefarm.com/Hoffman. That's future, P-H-A-R-M, myfuturefarm.com/Hoffman. Wild oil of oregano is all natural, science-based, and works without adverse side effects. MyFutureFarm.com/Hoffman. Welcome back to today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman. It's our weekly Q&A with Layla, but of course, we're in the time of coronavirus, and we're answering a lot of your questions related to that subject. You can send questions to radioprogram@AOL.com. No question is a stupid question. All questions are germane. I'm with Layla Mutin. She's our nutritionist in residence. We haven't seen each other except online for the past couple of weeks because in the interests of social distancing, our office is closed. We're doing some telemedicine. We're doing some phone calls with patients who have urgent questions and problems. Mm-hmm. And we invite those of you who need to reach out. Because we're here. We're here for you.
And you know,
we have a lot of time on our hands too.
Right. Yeah. Many of our patients live across the country and they always have phone consults with us. That has not changed. You could still call our office. Mm-hmm. And of course, that number is rerouted to Grimaldi, who is in a safe place. Mm-hmm. And who she will take your call or take your voicemail and set up your appointment with us.
The other way to do it is via email. Patients, that's P-A-T-I-E-N-T-S, at drhoffman.net. Has always been the way to get in touch with us with questions.
Dr. Hoffman, not
for the program, but you know, those of you who are patients, for you, you know, you have questions or concerns, and we hope that you're all doing well. If you want to check in, we'll hear from you. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
So, Dr. Hoffman, we've got the cherry blossom trees on my street.
Yes.
Are in full bloom.
Yeah.
And people are sneezing. I'm sneezing a little bit.
Yeah.
And people are getting freaked
scary.
Out when they
it's scary.
When you hear a sneeze.
Yeah.
People cross the street.
Yes, exactly. And you know, think of all the money that we've expended, you know, year in and year out for allergy medication. Just because it's coronavirus time doesn't stop the pollen from accumulating. And it's kind of an interesting thing that happens here in New York is that sometimes even before the trees are blossoming, people get pollen symptoms, and that's because of the jet stream. The jet stream comes from the south, and the jet stream sometimes introduces pollen to the air. So even before the blossoms are here, which they are now are, I mean, it's cherry blossom time in Washington, or it's past peak, actually. Lots of beautifully blossoming trees here in Manhattan, although we can't really go outside and look at them that much. I have a very very interesting article that was shared with me by Carolyn Gazella. Carolyn is from Impact Health Media, and she is she's not a health professional, but she's a very, very dedicated and talented science writer. And I have collaborated with her on several papers and several articles. And the article is from Allergy from March of 2020. Headline, pollen exposure weakens innate defense against respiratory viruses. Now, what they say here is that hundreds of plant species release their pollen into the air every year during early spring. During that period, pollen allergic as well as non-allergic patients frequently present to doctors with severe respiratory tract infections. Is that a coincidence?
Hmm.
Our objective was therefore to assess whether pollen may interfere with antiviral immunity. In other words, and I've had this like, oh my God, I'm getting a cold. It's like, is it allergy? Is it a cold? Is it, and then sometimes I turn the corner, I don't have it. And sometimes it morphs into a cold. And I go, you know, was it the, which came first, the chicken or the egg? Was it the cold or the pollen? Did the pollen precipitate the cold? And what they're saying here, that by, they measured the chemokine responses of airway tissue to rhinovirus. And it pollen significantly diminishes the defenses. Interferon gamma, co-exposure to pollen in mice who were exposed to the respiratory syncytial virus, it caused a greater susceptibility to the virus. So they suspect that there may be, this may be kind of a perfect storm for a lot of people, that they're having bad allergy symptoms.
Yeah.
And of course, bad allergy symptoms, they said, go home. You know, get out of here. We don't want you on the job, you know, because, you know, you're sneezing, you look awful, your eyes are red. But that actually may make you more vulnerable to the coronavirus. So I thought it was an interesting article.
Yeah, very interesting. Very, very interesting.
So, I mean, one thing that you can do, I mean, and they happen to be a sponsor, but I actually think that the recommendation is warranted, is use clear nasal spray, because it will get rid of some of the viral. I mean, it's not antiviral. It's more antibacterial. Mm-hmm. But it will also help to get rid of some of the pollen that may accumulate in your nasal passages. And you're not supposed to stick your fingers in your nose. You can stick, clear up your nostrils.
Yeah.
You know, provided, of course, that you keep it sterile and clean. And that will help you clear your nasal passages.
Right, right. So, Dr. Hoffman, we have a few questions about vitamin C versus coronavirus.
Oh, by the way, can I share this with you?
Yeah.
I wrote an article that I thought was very good, which is called Latest Developments in the Treatment Pipeline for the Novel Coronavirus.
Yeah.
And I talked about conventional treatments, you know, like Plaquenil, and I talked about, vaccine development, and I talked about convalescent serum, and you can get it at drhoffman.com. It was in their newsletter this morning.
Yes.
And I got this email. Don't understand your failure to keep up with and discuss high-dose IV vitamin C. Probably more effective and no adverse effects as opposed to Plaquenil or Remdesivir. Blah, blah, blah. And then they sent me a link to reports from a Dr. Cheng, who's a Chinese doctor who's doing some research on IV vitamin C. Now, that person did not read the article carefully, because in that article I reference a previous article where I go through all the plausible natural treatments for this, which include IV vitamin C. I'm all over IV vitamin C. So, like, what?
You've been all over IV vitamin C for a host of maladies for decades.
30 years, decades. I mean, use it, we're treating, mono, we're treating hepatitis C, we're treating cancer, and whenever I would come down with a cold, I would take it. Here's one of the problems is, the doctors who are offering IV vitamin C, they offer it in a private practice setting where, let's say my office was open, I would not welcome a patient who was coughing with a fever, who tested positive for COVID-19, to get IV vitamin C in my practice, because I would not know how to properly shield my coworkers and, my receptionist and people in the office from someone who's highly infectious. So most of those outpatient offices are closed. The problem is, in the conventional setting, they're very conservative and they're very reluctant to offer the very high doses of vitamin C that I would offer. Now, some doctors are throwing in a little vitamin C, into the IVs. These patients all have IVs inserted in their arms. And so they say, okay, let's put in 500 or 1,000 or 1,500 milligrams of vitamin C. I'm thinking, let's see what happens when we give people 25, 30, 50,000 milligrams of vitamin C.
Yes.
As, I commonly did in my practice.
Right. Right.
That work is being done in China in some clinical trials. It's showing initial promising results. We don't have the full results on that yet. Mm-hmm. But, here's two things about vitamin C. One, vitamin C supports the immune system. If you don't have enough vitamin C, you have scurvy, and then you get terrible susceptibility to infection. This has been known since, you know, the 1800s. Mm-hmm. So that's why they gave limes to English sailors. You know, they call them limeys.
Right.
It supported their buoyancy. So that was, you know, the work of Sir James Lind, who was a medical advisor to the English merchant marine and navy, and he saved a lot of lives because they prevented scurvy. Okay, that's one thing. But at a very high dose, at a dose that's probably higher than you can get by taking it orally, intravenously, it becomes strongly antiviral. It may actually kill viral particles. That it is the more controversial proposition, which I think should really be investigated in this.
Yeah.
My suspicion is that it's not being done in hospitals in the U.S., except that they may add a little, maybe a little zinc, a little vitamin C, and an IV to patients.
Right.
You know, that's going to help a little bit. In China, they are doing some trials with, still kind of conservative doses, maybe 10, 15 grams of vitamin C.
Well, one of the questions we do have, that for a hospitalized patient during this crisis, how much vitamin C, what would be the dosage? What would be your recommendation?
Don't know. And it, under different circumstances, it might require caution, because some of the patients who are having this have multiple organ failure. They're also getting fluid accumulation in their lungs. Their kidneys may not be working optimally. Their fluid balance is very crucial. So, you know, by pumping lots and lots of vitamin C into them, it might, I mean, hypothetically, it might backfire by accumulating in their lungs or backing up in their kidneys. So I'm just going to say that this needs to be investigated. Caution needs to be applied to this hypothesis.
It's not a blanket dosage, IV dosage for everybody, whether they're suffering from coronavirus or not. Right. Okay.
I mean, look, now, if I had the opportunity, I would do the experiment. You know, people coming down with coronavirus, you know, ambulatory patients, I would love if there was some clinic somewhere where under very careful precautions, people could go in and, you know, there'd be little boosts there and they could get like, you know, 15, 20, 25 grams of IV vitamin C and then go home back into their quarantine. That'd be nice. Or, you know, maybe visiting nurses with appropriate gear could go, you know, out with bottles of vitamin C to treat patients in a limited trial. That'd be fun to see. You know, if their clinical course is milder, if we came out of hospitals, you know, when we administer it early during the infection, that'd be nice to see.
That would be nice to see. Mark actually has a question to that effect. Please discuss the potential value of IV vitamin infusions that have a high dose of vitamin C, maybe other antioxidants, maybe some B vitamins, not just as relating to the COVID-19 situation, but what potential benefits would there be for people currently in good health?
This reminds me, is yesterday I was watching Fox, and they had the medical correspondent for Fox. I don't know what his name is, but he's a well-known local New York City doc, and he's been on top of it. He's been doing some good reporting, and he's talking about new drugs for this. He said, we mentioned one drug I'd never heard of. You know, it was some sort of monoclonal antibody, which seems to reduce inflammation. I don't know. It didn't sound too promising because, you know, do you really want to suppress the immune system of people who are suffering from an infection? I don't know if that's going to pan out. And then he mentioned another drug, promising drug. And that drug is called NAC.
Ah!
Or NAC,
N-acetylcysteine,
which is on formulary in hospitals. It's used to treat Tylenol overdoses. It's also used for respiratory problems. It's under the name Mucormist, and it's used actually to loosen phlegm and mucus in patients. And I guess they're using it, and that's an antioxidant. It builds glutathione. It also, so, you know, that was kind of cool. But the question was, you know, more generally, what do you think?
Well, N-acetylcysteine is terrific. And that, what about an IV cocktail, Dr. Hoffman, for people who are already healthy as a preventive measure?
I think that that's a hypothetical. You know, I think that there may be some offices open that are taking in healthy patients and giving them IVs. You know, that I'm just not sure if that confers a greater advantage than you know, just taking adequate doses of vitamin C orally. I mean, I'll tell you personally, right. I'm pretty conservative. I'm taking about 1,500 milligrams of vitamin C orally every day.
I'm taking about that myself.
More like 2,000. Okay, so
right.
So that, and it's actually been established that the body can't absorb more than 500 or 1,000 at a time, and it's best to time it through the day. You know, maybe do it four times during the day rather than taking it all at once.
I'm taking 500 a meal. I'm taking the occasional zinc.
Yeah.
You know, having NAC on hand is a terrific idea. Mm-hmm. I think that's a great idea because it boosts glutathione synthesis as well. And glutathione is
I did a little video when I was in Tortola, and I showed people the care package that I brought down to Tortola because already this was emerging, and I was just hoping that none of my party or family members during that dive vacation were going to get sick. And I had all these things. And one of the things, I held up a bottle of NAC that, you know, we had in case people started to come down with respiratory trouble. Fortunately, none of us were sick. And, you know, we traversed many airports and we were on many planes. And I'm knocking wood here. Everybody's fine.
I've really got
past that 14-day quarantine, you know, from foreign travel. But I didn't come from a hot zone. I came from a really cold zone. There was nobody on the island of Tortola who was sick yet. So, you know, as opposed to if I'd come from Spain or Italy or, you know, China.
Yeah. Okay. This might be a good time for a break.
Let's do it. Let's offer our sponsors an opportunity to share this important message with you. Here goes. This episode of Intelligent Medicine is brought to you by the Protocol for Life Balance product line, available at my online dispensary. Protocol for Life Balance offers a wide range of professional-grade products using ingredients backed by strong scientific research. Among them, several stand out, which help support positive mood and relaxation. GABA, 5-HTP, SAMe, L-tryptophan, and Mucuna extract. With current economic and living conditions causing widespread sadness and tension, these neurotransmitters and their precursors can help support positive mood and relaxation. That's according to numerous clinical studies. Their ingredients are backed by solid scientific data. They're only available from healthcare practitioners, but they're available to you at drhoffman.com/protocolforlifebalance. That's drhoffman.com/protocolforlifebalance. Thanks for listening. Thanks for supporting our sponsors. They're what make Intelligent Medicine a continuing free resource to you, especially important now that we're all facing the COVID-19 pandemic. And now back to our questions with Layla. Hey, what's that?
Yeah, we've got one from Debbie. I'm a 71-year-old female. Over the last few days, I've been a bit under the weather. I called my doctor's office, whose office is closed. He's only taking phone calls because of the lockdown. Mm-hmm. And for the time being, he put me on 300 milligrams of Ceftonir.
Yeah, that's a cephalosporin drug.
And,
it's likely that he thinks she has a mild bacterial infection. It will do, I think, virtually nothing against coronavirus if she indeed has coronavirus.
Okay. Well, she said that her nose was draining, to say the least, and there was a lot of mucus going down her throat. So the doctor gave her that.
It sounds to me like possibly overkill, but, you know, under the circumstances, I think doctors are jumpy and they're, you know, going to prescribe antibiotics at the drop of a hat.
Yeah. So Debbie's been on it for 3 days now and now having some shortness of breath, but no fever. I don't want to panic, but what should I do? Call your doctor's office, $64,000 Debbie.
$64,000 question. You know, this is the kind of situation where, you know, we have to, quote, manage this expectantly. You know, people who are otherwise at low risk are told, you know, if you feel sick, stay home, self-quarantine, it'll pass. Mm-hmm. By definition, being over 65, you know, that is a so-called comorbidity, you know, and then she may have other underlying medical conditions which predispose her to a greater risk of a more serious outcome. Breathlessness is usually the trigger for more serious consideration of hospitalization. And it would be great if they had testing, easy home testing. You know, like, okay, you know, call her up. I'll drop ship a kit to you. take a quick nasal swab, send it to the lab. Within 24 hours, we'll have results for you to find out. Right now, it's actually very hard to get results. There are testing places. It depends on where you are. Your doctor should know where to send you, or if your doctor doesn't know, because frankly, doctors are getting overwhelmed by this, and it's a fast-moving situation. Call your local health department. In New York, the number is 311 for information. Where can you get tested? On the other hand, I think people are also doing a little heavy-duty introspection now. It's like they wake up, they don't feel so good, they got a headache, they got a little bit of a cough, nasal congestion. It may be an ordinary respiratory infection. That's not.
It might be the COVID-19. Common cold.
It could be common cold. It could be allergies. It could be allergies. You're having a bad day. I mean, think about it. Over the past year, how many times have you woken up on the wrong side of the bed? And you kind of feel lousy under the weather, but throat's a little scratchy. It passes.
It could be all those Hostess cupcakes you ate yesterday.
That too, absolutely.
Because you're trying to comfort yourself from the anxiety of coronavirus.
But on the circumstances, everything gets magnified, and we're doing frequent self checks. Like, how am I doing?
It's
like,
no. What? And this is where the power of suggestion comes in a bad way. Yeah. Like if. Say you, Dr. Hoffman, you would prescribe somebody, a medication, right? Yeah. And then you tell them, these are the side effects you may experience.
Yeah.
More often than not, they may experience some of those side effects.
I'll tell you what
I
have.
If we told them nothing,
they may not.
But you want to do the responsible thing and say, now everybody say, do I have that dry cough? And do I have that scratchy throat? Oh, no. Do
loss
I have a
taste.
Temperature
loss
now?
Of taste is another and subtle sign.
Exactly. Yeah, well, guess what? When you have a common cold and your nose is stuffed up, when you can't smell, you also can't taste.
So the answer, we don't want to minimize, but it could be.
We don't want to minimize.
I will tell you this is so psychosomatic, as you say.
Yeah.
When somebody in my family announces to me, I have a cold, I go, whoa. And I back off. I give them that, instant social distancing. And I start going, my throat does feel a little tight. And I get almost like a wave of premonition of how it's going to be.
And you put on your garlic necklace?
Yeah. Okay. And 90% of the time, it's for naught. But I get this sort of instantaneous psychosomatic response to the possibility that I think people are prey to that, unfortunately. There's cases of what's called hysterical illness. It's like school children suddenly all being overcome by some hidden emanation from their schoolhouse, and then they test and they can't find what it is. Maybe it's the the cell phone tower nearby, or who knows, but it can happen. It can happen that this is, anyway, but look, for this lady, I have concerns about this lady. I mean, she's actually describing kind of the early prodrome of coronavirus, and she should be screened medically, especially if she's alone, because things can go downhill fast when you're on your own.
Right. It can hit you hard. Okay. All right. Deborah, best of luck to you. Call your doctor.
Yeah.
Call your doctor.
Best bet.
Yep. Mm-hmm. So, Dr. Hoffman, we've got a very thoughtful question here from Teresa. Mm-hmm. I have concern about keeping people cooped up, the self-quarantine for extended periods of time. Mm-hmm. I'm already witnessing our young people getting restless. They have nothing to do, and that means troublemaking could ensue. How long will this quarantine last? I worry about social unrest. Mm-hmm. I feel more afraid of people losing it than I am of the virus. I feel silly, but I am seeing the natives getting more and more restless as we continue to take more and more away.
Yeah, this is a big social and psychology experiment we're undertaking across the country. And what I have to say is I'm very, very proud of the fortitude and discipline of my fellow New Yorkers. Is that under circumstances where New York really is the epicenter of this, I think people are behaving pretty reasonably.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, there's some foolishness, people who are not obeying social distancing. And then there's, I think, a little too much, you know, hysteria of, you know, people wearing, you know, very sophisticated gas masks and protective mm-hmm. gear walking down the street, you know, looking for all the world like moon men, you know, that
right.
I think is over the top. I also, you know, I'm looking for signs that there's some, you know, social breakdown, which there could be if, say Ebola had become rampant in New York and people were walking around, you know, with, you know, blood gushing from their eyes, nose and mouth and, you know, their corpses in the street. You know, it's kind of like the scene in Monty Python, Bringing in the Dead, you know, from the plague with the death wagons and things like that. That's a condition where social order could break down. And then, you know, get the uniformed services calling in sick and dying, and you know, you just don't feel protected. And then, you know, you start thinking about Second Amendment concerns. You know, do I have my AK-47?
Right.
And there's none of that vibe here in New York. I'm not sure about your neighborhood where you are, but...
In Queens, no, I don't have any of that vibe at all. If anything, the neighbors are coming out and saying, you know, is everything okay? How is your mother? Yeah. My mother is 85 years old, and people
the other
are
thing
asking
is that,
about, which is very nice.
Unlike
she's fine.
Unlike this person who writes this question, and unlike even us, mm-hmm. Kids are very well adapted to a social media landscape, and they're communicating in ways that we can't even fathom.
Right.
And so they are very connected, although they're isolated. I mean, this is part of the problem before, is that kids. You know, alone, without stepping outside their bedrooms, we're conducting, you know, dozens and dozens of conversations, with multiple people all over the place.
True.
You know, unbeknownst to us, they're doing it. You know, they're connected. Yep. And so, I think they'll be okay. I mean, it, you know, also, I think you have to explain to young kids what's happening. Are they picking up on that sort of danger vibe from their parents? We have to be careful that we don't sort of breed, you know, unnecessary anxiety, fear, and insecurity among them. But among, you know, my young family members, they're thinking of it as kind of an adventure. You know?
Yeah. Oh, what are we doing? We're staying home today. Oh, same as yesterday. Okay.
I mean, I was one of the kids who liked school, but I was an outlier, you know. I think, you know, so look, I think what's important. In some, and we're going a little longer than we usually do, but it's okay because
that's all right.
Special circumstances. I think one of the most important things is, in spite of the fact that we can't go to school, we can't go to work, to maintain a routine. So what I do, absolutely, I make my bed every morning. I mean,
yes.
I don't have to make it because there's nobody here going to see it, but I go through the motions. I clean
go through motions,
up.
Structure your day. Go through your routines.
I clean the apartment. I hang up my clothes. I get dressed in the morning. I don't slouch around in, you know, in my PJs or in my underwear.
Right.
I bathe and shower and shave as if I had to present to the world. Now, nobody would see me, you know, with like a shaggy beard or, you know, like, you know, my hair's getting long because I can't get my haircuts. But, you know, these are kind of the routines that get us through the day. And then I have my work and I do my work and I do my writing and I you know, force myself to kind of do a little routine. I'm also involved in careful food shopping and preparation. That's, I think, one of the things that, can help things hang together for you. And then I also treat myself to, you know, fun stuff because, you know, there's a lot of shows that I kind of would like to catch up on. I've heard they're good. And
it's
an enforced operation. And, you know, yes, I'm listening to, you know, the pronouncements on TV and I, you know, I listen to Cuomo and I listen to Trump and, you know, and then I deliberately turn that off because how much of a dirge can you withstand after a while?
Exactly.
You know, divert yourself with something entertaining. You know, if you're an artist, do some of that. If you're a musician, do some of that. You know, for me, I like writing. So, you know, I'm, you know, give myself a schedule. I think those are the important things that are going to tide us over during this time. And, you know, with kids, they need activities and games. And, you know, remember, there used to be games. I don't know if there still are games, but things like Monopoly, you know.
Yeah, board games, Scrabble. Oh my goodness, backgammon,
risk,
chess, checkers.
You know, all those kind of things, yeah.
Break out the board games. Absolutely, yeah. Have fun.
Or there are online versions of them now. So, you know, you don't physically have the board. I mean, by the way, you can just order one. You'll get it in, you know, 48 hours. There's home curriculum for teaching kids. Kids are being homeschooled. That's a good thing, I think, because homeschooling can produce a really, well-rounded, well-educated child. I mean, they may be missing some of the social dimension, but hey, you know, good stuff when the parents get engaged, you know, and I think that's going to, you know, a lot of parents, you're very busy, you know, they work, they come home, they check their cell phone, you know, now they have to engage with their kids. That's not bad. That's a good thing.
That's wonderful.
That's a positive aspect of this.
More real, true FaceTime. That's a good thing. I think that's the silver lining in all of this.
You know, like I have a relative, she's 101. She was 101 yesterday. And she couldn't have a party, unless you were at a big, big party for 100. You know, 100, you get a big party. 101, not such a big party. Maybe 110, we'll give her another party. But she was actually born during the Spanish flu epidemic of 1919.
Wow.
And so what happened was she was thrilled because through modern communication, she was able to FaceTime with her whole extended family, her relatives, her grandchildren, her great-grandchildren, her cousins and nieces and nephews. And she was just absolutely thrilled with the opportunity. Although, we're keeping to a minimum her contacts. Her contacts will be just with her caregivers. And if they're sick and, you know, they can't go in and see her, they'll have to find substitutes. But, you know, There's a workaround for this. And fortunately, it could be worse. I mean, this is very devastating. It's just devastating enough to cause major social and economic dislocation and, you know, quite a few deaths. But it will get handled. And, you know,
it will get handled. pardon my cough.
Wait a minute.
We will.
Did you cover your
persevere.
Did you cover your mouth?
Yes, I did.
I'm feeling the heebie-jeebies just listening to that.
Oh, no. Vaccination 1, 2, 3. Vaccination 1, 2, 3.
Yeah.
Remember that?
Yeah.
Oh, my. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
So, Teresa, thank you for that very thoughtful question. And we invite you to keep your questions coming to radioprogram@AOL.com.
It's not the zombie apocalypse yet. All right.
Right.
Seen too many episodes.
And we will continue.
Walking,
we will continue
too
to
many
be
episodes
here
of
and
The Walking Dead.
Keep you informed. Yeah.
Yeah, we'll be. Yeah, absolutely. We'll and with all the latest breaking news on coronavirus, and also, you know, with the perspective on natural therapies. Thank you, Layla, for joining us.
Thank
stay
you,
well,
Dr.
Stay healthy.
Hoffman.
And stay.
You too.
As upbeat as usual, and we'll join you again next week for another discussion. Radioprogram@AOL.com, the destination for questions. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is Intelligent Medicine.
This is Layla Mutin, RD. I see patients regularly, along with Dr. Hoffman. If you require a nutrition consult with me but live out of town, there's no need to travel to New York City. I have telephone consultations with clients from all over the country. Please visit drhoffman.com for more information. And to set up an appointment, call 212-779-1744. That's 212-779-1744. I look forward to being a collaborator in your healthcare.